This is the first lecture in Unit 4, Component 2, concerned with healthcare processes and decision-making. This unit focuses on the classic paradigm of clinical process as it unfolds between patient and clinician. In this paradigm, the assumption is that a single patient is interacting with a single clinician about a single problem during a single episode of care. Various tools may be used to mediate the interaction, including medical records, computers, and guidelines. However, for purposes of analysis, this discussion is confined to this arrangement in part because it is realistic in many situations and in part because it helps us bound the problem. We can think of this classic paradigm as somewhat analogous to what has been called the central theorem of health informatics. In the central theorem, articulated by Chuck Friedman, the assumption is that a human being working in healthcare will perform better when assisted by properly designed computer tools than when working alone. It is the fundamental assumption that most of us working in biomedical informatics carry with us as the foundation of our work, even when it is unstated. Similarly, the classic paradigm seems to be operative even when it is unstated in discussions, not only of the analysis, but of the clinical process, such as diagnostic reasoning or making treatment decisions, but also in the analysis of interaction between clinicians and technology, such as computer systems. The idea is that there is a single patient with a single problem being addressed by a single clinician during a single visit, and we develop technologies that support this one-to-one-to-one-to-one arrangement. Later in this lecture, we will discuss other configurations to shift our thinking about how computer tools might need to be designed to serve other purposes. For now, though, we will focus on this classic concept of the patient-clinician relationship. In this discussion, we have been using the word clinician quite frequently to refer to the individual who is providing care. It will be helpful to define this term with a little more precision, so we know just who it is we are talking about. Here, the term clinician does not refer to a person in possession of any particular degree or educational background. After all, a person with a degree in nursing may be in a senior administrative position such as the CEO. Most people would not call that work clinical. Similarly, a person with a doctorate in medicine may be developing computer systems or running a health insurance plan. Most people would not call these forms of work clinical either. At the same time, we know that the work of patient care is performed by persons with a variety of educational and training backgrounds. So what do we mean by the word clinician? For the purpose of this lecture, the clinician is a person who possesses the following attributes. First, a clinician is someone who possesses specialized knowledge. Usually, this knowledge is obtained through extensive education, such as medical or nursing school. Second, a clinician is someone who has received extensive experiential training. For example, such fields as nursing and medicine require post-classroom learning, substantial training and practice under supervision in order to learn how to apply formal knowledge in practice. Third, a clinician is a person who has a direct relationship with the patient. Regardless of one's training, indirect activities such as setting policy about patient care do not constitute clinical work, while direct interactions with the patient does. Fourth, a clinician is someone who combines their knowledge, training, and experience to make decisions about patient care, whether these are decisions about the assessment of the patient or decisions about how to manage the patient. Fifth, a clinician is a person who is expected to act in the best interest of the patient. This is referred to as a fiduciary responsibility, similar to that of a trustee for a trust or a board member for an organization. The expectation is that these individuals make choices and actions that are not in their own best interest, but for those of the trustee, or in the case of clinicians, for the patient. Sixth, the clinician integrates diverse types of information, including not only individual knowledge of the patient and medical knowledge acquired in training, but also other information about local resources and constraints, as we will discuss later. 7. Clinicians are almost always functioning within significant time and resource constraints. When referencing to a clinician, then, we are referring to a person possessing these attributes, whether it is a neurosurgeon, a clinical pharmacist, or a physical therapist. It is helpful, before we begin talking about the clinical process, to think about the kinds of information that clinicians use in the course of assessing and managing patients. This table lists 5 types of information that clinicians commonly use in their patient interactions and management. First, in the top row is patient data, or information that is specific to an individual person, such as whether they have allergies, whether they have a history of diabetes, or a heart murmur is present. This information is obtained from the patient, from family or friends, from medical records, or from the clinician's own observations. In the second row, population statistics refers to the data that has been aggregated from individual patients. An informal version of population statistics is a clinician's knowledge of recent or local history, such as recent flu outbreaks or a recent resurgence of whooping cough, which may have bearing on the findings in a particular case. A more formal version of population statistics might include such things as a public health department publication about the frequency of diseases in a particular locale, or population-based reports that are obtained from a clinic or hospital's electronic health record. The third type of information listed in the table is medical knowledge, the rules or conclusions about health and healthcare that are generalizable to many persons. This is the information obtained from textbooks, whether electronic or in print form, from reviews in journal articles, and from the medical literature. The fourth type of information, which is surprisingly useful for clinicians, is called logistic information. This focuses on how to get things done rather than what to do. For example, not whether a particular medication is indicated for a particular patient, but how to obtain that medication or how to get it paid for. Not whether a particular type of surgery is indicated for a patient, but which surgeon is available to perform it, and how he or she may be reached. This type of information is most often available in local sources, be they informal sources such as the organizational knowledge of staff in the clinic or hospital that have been there for a long time, or formal sources such as policy and procedure manuals or other institutional resources. Finally, the fifth type of information that physicians often use is called social influence. This refers to how others get the job done. Clinicians may not always conform exactly to the practices of others, but in general, they like to know how other clinicians are managing particular problems and know that their own practices are relatively well aligned with those of others. In studying clinicians and their reasoning and decision-making processes, it is helpful to remember that all of these types of information may be brought to bear and incorporated at various stages of the process. Now that we have looked at the major types of information that clinicians use, it is helpful to think about the ways in which clinicians organize and reorganize information as they manage a patient. Next, we will look at how information begins in a narrative structure, becomes rearranged to a very highly structured history and physical format, and then gets rearranged again into meaningful groupings in a hierarchy, as described by Evans and Gadd. We will see how the structure of clinical information is the inverse to the way this information is structured in textbooks, how the manner of recording information, such as the SOAP, Subjective, Objective, Assessment, and Plan note, can be helpful in supporting the clinician's thinking, and how other ad hoc structures are used as needed. And finally, how this information may need to be reformulated into a computable structure so that healthcare information systems can utilize the information for decision support, quality improvement, and research. Although a great deal of effort and attention is devoted to giving structure to clinical data, the narrative structure is pervasive throughout the clinical process. This slide contains an old saying in healthcare, attributed to Philip A. Tumulty, that says, "Disease hides its secrets in a casual parenthesis." What this means is that for all the useful information that we obtain by asking pointed and directed questions, meant to elucidate the essential details of a patient's problem, it is often the case that critical clues emerge only when we simply allow the patient to tell his or her story. In fact, the clinical process almost always begins and very often ends with a narrative. Catherine Montgomery Hunter has examined some of the many ways that stories are used and are important to the healthcare system. First, stories are the principal communication between patient and clinician. Before asking direct and pointed questions, clinicians are taught to ask open-ended questions that let the patient tell his or her story in its native form. This enables the clinician not only to find facts embedded in the stories that are meaningful for diagnosis, but also to understand the meaning of the illness for the patient. Listening to the story is an important part of relationship building and may have therapeutic value on its own. This can be a very important aspect of the quality of care as perceived by the patient. Beyond this, stories are also a form of efficient communication among clinicians. Highly structured narratives are a very efficient form of communication among experts, who often refer to these narratives as the patient's story. Storytelling in healthcare settings has also been shown to be an important part of the hidden curriculum through which values and ethics are communicated, often informally during off-hours or after-hours. Unfortunately, our modern, often fragmented healthcare system does not always deal well with stories due to the constraints of time, the multidisciplinary process, and other factors. As a result, we may eliminate or alter stories, reduce opportunities for them to be heard, or extract information from them and, in the process, lose important context or details. As we examine the clinical process through which clinicians gather information and make sense of the data and decide what to do for each patient, we need to recognize that the interpretation of data depends on many factors. First, there are professional and disciplinary differences. A neurologist and psychiatrist examining the same patient may elicit and focus on very different information and make very different sense of it. Clinicians also use differing diagnostic approaches to interpreting clinical data as they attempt to reach a diagnosis. When observing clinicians working in groups, it becomes apparent that an important part of interpretation, especially in interdisciplinary care, is social construction, or the meaning that arises from the discourse among clinicians as they discuss a patient. This can be observed in such settings as intensive care unit rounds, during which the conversation among the participants allows insight and consensus to emerge. Perhaps most importantly, clinician interpretation of data depends on context, the patient's context, the clinician's context, the setting, and other factors. A single piece of information may have very different implications depending on these contexts. Up to this point, we have focused on the classic paradigm to help us understand the process that clinicians use. This slide depicts the classic paradigm with one patient, one problem, one clinician, and one visit, and compares it to an alternate situation. In this case, the operating room. Surgical procedures usually involve one visit, concerned with one problem in a single patient. But many clinicians from many disciplines participate in the process, and synchronous information sharing and collaboration become especially important. The setting is also characterized by a short time horizon and fairly narrow clinical focus, as well as substantial advance planning and rich resource availability. These differences may have implications for the kind of health information technologies that will be helpful to the clinicians involved. Let's consider another setting that differs from that classic paradigm: the presence of complex acute illness. In such cases, one patient may be cared for in one or more visits by multiple clinicians dealing with multiple health problems. The patient may have lung disease, kidney disease, joint disease, an infection, as well as chronic conditions such as diabetes and hypertension. In these instances, there are multiple disciplines serving multiple roles, performing multiple tasks. There is often a short time horizon, and there are often unplanned events. Additionally, there is almost always a great deal of uncertainty about some of the data, especially in critical care settings that tend to be focused on immediate goals. Because of unanticipated events and uncertain data, there is a requirement for flexibility and dynamic replanning as things change. Healthcare information systems designed for such a context might have different requirements than those designed for simple one-to-one settings. Yet another example in which healthcare goes beyond the classic paradigm is the emergency department. Here, there are many patients who have many different clinical problems being treated simultaneously by many different clinicians, usually involving a single visit, although in many cases there may have been previous episodes of care. There is a simultaneous attention to both acute and non-acute conditions. The very short time horizon in emergency departments treat 'em and street 'em because of the need to constantly keep things moving. There is a very strong requirement to be prepared for the unexpected, even in the face of significant resource constraints. And there is a significant requirement for effective coordination, cooperation, and collaboration among the many individuals participating in the care. Once again, these factors may have significant influence on the kinds of information technology that will be helpful. Having considered several alternatives to the classic paradigm, we now return to it. One way of looking at this is that people who consult with the clinician in general are looking for the answers to three questions. What is the matter? What can be done about it? What will happen to me? These questions that patients ask correspond to the classic steps that clinicians take to make a diagnosis, recommend treatment, and make a prognosis. In the remainder of this unit, we will examine how clinicians gather data from the patient, analyze findings within that data, make sense out of it to reach a diagnosis, consider that diagnosis along with many other contextual factors to recommend a treatment or management plan, and finally, communicate their results to a variety of interested parties.